Chapter 20. Pierre Radisson. It was at the trading post of Three Rivers on the St. Lawrence River, the year 1662, and the time, early in the morning, when the wood thrush had just begun his call. Strange things happened then, but these were frontier days when strange things used to happen, so do not be surprised when you learn what befell Pierre Radisson, son of a French immigrant to Canada, and then a youth of about 17 years of age. With two companions, young Pierre had gone out from the stockade to shoot ducks on Lake St. Peter, not far from his first home of the French immigrants to Canada. The sportsmen were all young, for only young boys would have left the shelter of the fortification at this time, as all the Canadians knew that the dreaded Iroquois had been lying in ambush around the little settlement of Three Rivers, day and night, for a whole year. In fact, not a week passed but that some settler was set upon in the fields and left dead by the terrible redskins. Farmers had flocked to the little fortification when only ventured back to their broad acres when armed with a musket. But these were only boys, and, like all boys, they went along boasting how they would fight when the Indians came. One kept near the edge of the forest, on the lookout for the Iroquois, while the others kept to the water in quest of game. They had gone along in this manner for about 3 miles when they met a fellow who was tending sheep. "Keep out from the foot of the hills," he called to them. "The Iroquois are there. I saw about 100 heads rising out of the bushes about an hour ago." The boys loaded their pistols and primed their muskets. In a short time they shot some ducks, and this seemed to satisfy one of the young men. "I've had enough," said he. "I'm going back to the stockade where I can be safe." "And I'll go with you," said the second. But young Radisson laughed at them. "If you are afraid to go forward," said he, "I will go ahead by myself." So the wild youth went onward, shooting game at many places, until at length he had a large number of geese, ducks, and teal. There were more than he could possibly carry, so, hiding in a hollow tree the game that he could not bring back, he began trudging towards Three Rivers. Wading swollen brooks and scrambling over fallen trees, he finally caught sight of the town chapel, glimmering in the sunlight against the darkening horizon above the river. He had reached the place where his comrades had left him, so he sat down to rest himself. The shepherd had driven his sheep back to Three Rivers, and there was no one near. The river came lapping through the rushes. There was a clacking of ducks as they came swooping down to their marsh nests, and Radisson felt strangely lonely. He noticed, too, that his pistols were water-soaked. Emptying the charges, he reloaded, then crept back to reconnoiter the woodland. Great flocks of ducks were swimming on the river, so he determined to have one more shot before he returned to the fort, now within easy hail. Young Pierre crept through the grass towards the game, but he suddenly stopped, for before him was a sight that rooted him to the ground with horror. Just as they had fallen lay his comrades of the morning. They were lying face upward among the rushes. Radisson was too far away from the woods to get back to them, so stooping down he tried to reach a hiding place in the marsh. As he bent over, 100 tufted heads rose from the high grass, and beady eyes looked to see which way he might go. They were behind him, before him, on all sides of him. His only hope was a dash for the cane-grown river, where he might hide himself until darkness would give him a chance to rush to the fort. Slipping a bullet and some powder into his musket as he ran, and ramming it down, young Pierre dashed through the brushwood for a place of safety. Crash! A score of guns roared from the forest. He turned and fired back, but before he could reload, an Iroquois brave was upon him. He was thrown upon his back, was disarmed, his hands were bound behind him with deer thongs, and he was dragged into the woods. Half drawn, half driven, he was taken to the shore where a flotilla of canoes were hidden. Fires were kindled, and upon forked sticks driven into the ground, the redskins boiled a kettle of water for the evening meal. The Iroquois admired bravery in any man, and they now evinced a certain affection for this young Frenchman, for, in defiance of danger, They had seen him go hunting alone. When attacked, he had fired back at enough enemies to have terrified any ordinary Canadian. This they liked. So his clothing was returned to him. They daubed his cheeks with war paint, shaved his head in the manner of the red-skinned braves, and when they saw that their stewed dog turned him faint, they boiled him some meat in clean water and gave him some meal browned upon burning sand. That night he slept beneath a blanket between two warriors. In the morning the Indians embarked in 37 canoes. By sunset they were among the islands at the mouth of the River Richelieu, where were great clouds of wild ducks which darkened the air at their approach. Young Pierre bore up bravely, determined to remain with his captors until an opportunity to escape presented itself. The red men treated him kindly, saying, "Chagan, Chagan, be merry, cheer up." He was given a paddle and was told to row, which he did right willingly. Another band of warriors was met with on the river, and the prisoner was forced to show himself as a trophy of victory and to sing songs for his captors, which he did to the best of his ability. Pierre was now a thorough savage. He was given a tin-looking glass by which the Indians used to signal by the sun, and also a hunting knife. The Iroquois neared Lake Champlain, where the river became so turbulent that they were forced to land and make a portage. Young Radisson hurried over the rocks, helping the older warriors to carry their packs. As night came on, he was the first to cut wood for the campfire. It was now about a week since the Redmen had left Lake St. Peter, and they entered the gray waste of Lake Champlain. Paddling down its entire length, they entered the waters of beautiful Lake George, and, beaching the canoes upon its western bank, abandoned them, the warriors striking out through the forest for the country of the Iroquois. For 2 days they thus journeyed from the lake, when they were met by several women, who loaded themselves down with the luggage of the party and accompanied the victorious braves to the village. Here the whole tribe marched out to meet them, singing, firing guns, shouting a welcome, dancing a war dance of joy. It was now time for young Pierre to run the gauntlet. Sometimes the white prisoners were slowly led along with trussed arms and shackled feet, so that they could not fail to be killed before they reached the end of the line. With Radisson, it was different. He was stripped free and was told to run so fast that his tormentors could not hit him. He did this and reached the end of the human lane unscathed. As the white boy dashed free of the line of his tormentors, a captive Huron woman who had been adopted by the tribe caught him and led him to her cabin, where she fed and clothed him. But soon a band of braves marched to her door, demanded his surrender, and took him to the council lodge of the Iroquois for judgment. Radisson was led into a huge cabin where several old men sat solemnly around a central fire, smoking their calumets or peace pipes. He was ordered to sit down. A coal of fire was then put into the bowl of the great council pipe, and it was passed reverently around the assemblage. The old Huron woman now entered, waved her arms aloft, and begged for the life of the young man. As she made her appeal, the old man smoked on silently with deep, guttural ho-hos, meaning, "Yes, yes, we are much pleased." So she was granted permission to adopt Radisson as a son. The nerve and courage of the young French boy had thus saved his life. He must bide his time. By and by, he would have an opportunity to escape. It was soon autumn, the period of the hunt, so young Pierre set out into the forest with three Iroquois in order to lay in a supply of meat for the winter months. One night, as the woodland rovers were returning to their wigwams, there came the sound of someone singing through the leafy thicket, and a man approached. He was an Algonquin brave, a captive among the Iroquois, and he told him that he had been on the track of bears since daybreak. He was welcome to the campfire, and when he learned that Radisson was from Three Rivers, he immediately grew friendly with a captive white boy. That evening, when the campfire was roaring and crackling so that the Iroquois could not hear what he said, the Indian told Radisson that he had been captive for 2 years and that he longed to make his escape. "Hest, boy," said he, Do you love the French? Pierre looked around cautiously. Do you love the Algonquins? He replied. As I do my own mother, was the answer. Then leaning closer, the warrior whispered, Brother, white man, let us escape. The Three Rivers, it is not so far off. Will you live like a dog in bondage, or will you have your liberty with the French? Then he lowered his voice. Let us kill all three of these Iroquois tonight when they are asleep, and then let us paddle away up Lake Champlain again to the country of our own people. Radisson's face grew pale beneath his war paint. He hesitated to answer, and as he looked about him, the suspicious Iroquois cried out, Why so much whispering? We are telling hunting stories, answered the Algonquin, smiling. This seemed to satisfy the Iroquois, for, wearied by the day's hunt, they soon dozed off in sleep and were snoring heavily, their feet to the glowing embers. Their guns were stacked carelessly against a tree. It was the time for action. The French boy was terrified lest the Algonquin should carry out his threat, and so pretended to be asleep. Rising noiselessly, the captive redskin crept up to the fire and eyed the three sleeping Mohawks with no kindly glance. The red men slept heavily on, while the cry of the whippoorwill sounded ominously from the black and gloomy forest. The crafty Algonquin stepped, like a cat, over the sleeping forms of the braves, took possession of their firearms, and then walked to where Radisson was lying. The French boy rose uneasily. As he did so, the Indian thrust a tomahawk into one of his hands, pointing with a menacing gesture to the three Iroquois. Radisson's hand shook like a leaf, but the captive red man's hand did not shake, and lifting his hatchet, he made an end to the sleeping Iroquois. Hooray! Radisson was free! The Algonquin did not waste precious moments, but hastily packing up all their possessions, they placed them in the canoe, took to the water, and slipped away towards Lake Champlain. I was sorry to have been in such an encounter, writes Radisson, but it was too late to repent. The fugitives were a long way from Three Rivers on the St. Lawrence, and they knew that many roving Iroquois were hunting in the country between them and the French settlement. They must go carefully, be perpetually on their guard, and then they would be among their own people again. Only caution, caution, and never a sound at any time. Traveling only at night and hiding during the day, the fugitives crossed Lake Champlain, entered the Richelieu, and, after many portages, finally swept out upon the wide surface of Lake St. Peter in the St. Lawrence. They paddled hard and were soon within a day's journey of Three Rivers, yet they were in greater danger then than at any time in the hazardous trip, as the Iroquois had infested this part of the St. Lawrence for more than a year and often lay hidden in the rush-grown marshes and the wooded islands, waiting for some unsuspecting French Canadian to pass by. It was 4 o'clock in the morning when the Algonquin and White Boy reached the side of Lake St. Peter. They cooked their breakfast, covered the fire, and lay down to sleep. At 6 o'clock, the Algonquin shook Pierre by the shoulder, urging him to cross the lake to the Three Rivers side. The Iroquois are lurking about here, the French boy answered. I'm afraid to go. Let us wait until dark, then all will be well. No, no, answered the brave. Let us paddle forward. We are past fear. Radisson consented to take a chance at getting to the stockade, although his judgment told him to wait until dark. So the canoe was pushed out from the rushes, and with strong strokes, the flimsy boat was driven towards the north shore. They were halfway across when Pierre called out, I see shadows on the water ahead. The Indian, who was in the stern, stood up, saying, It is but the shadow of a flying bird. There is no danger. So they kept on. But as they progressed, the shadows multiplied, for they were the reflections of many Iroquois hidden among the rushes. The fugitives now saw them, and heading their canoe for the south shore, fled for their lives. On they went. But on came the Iroquois, nearer and nearer, There was a crash of musketry, and the bottom of the canoe was punctured by a ball. The Algonquin fell dead, while the canoe gradually filled with water, settled, and sank, with the young Frenchman clinging to the side. Now a firm hand seized him, and he was hauled into one of the canoes of the Iroquois. The victor set up a shrill yelp of triumph. Then they went ashore and kindled a great fire. Radisson was bound, roped around the waist, and thrown down upon the ground, where he lay with other captives, 2 Frenchmen, 1 white woman, and 20 Hurons. In 17 canoes, the Iroquois now paddled up the Richelieu River for their own country, frequently landing to camp and cook. When they reached the village, Radisson was greeted with shouts of rage by the friends of the murdered Mohawks. Suddenly, there broke from the throng of onlookers the Iroquois family that had adopted young Pierre. Pushing through the crowd of torturers, the mother caught Radisson by the hair, crying out, "Orimba! Orimba!" She then shoved him to her husband, who led the trembling young Frenchman to their own lodge. "Thou fool," cried the old chief, turning wrathfully upon the young man. "Thou wast my son. Thou lovest us not, although we saved thy life. Wouldst kill me too?" Then he shoved him to a mat upon the ground, saying, "Chagan, now be merry. It is a fine business you've gotten yourself into, to be sure." Radisson sank to the ground, trembling with fear, and endeavored to eat something. He was relating his adventures when there was a roar of anger from the Iroquois outside, and a moment later he was seized and carried back to the other prisoners. We will draw a veil over what now befell him. After 3 days of misery, the half-dead Frenchman was brought before the council of the Mohawk chiefs. Sachem after sachem rose and spoke. The question to be decided was, could the Mohawks afford to offend the great Iroquois chief who was the French youth's friend? This chieftain wished to have the young man's life spared. Would they do so? After much talk and passing of the peace pipe, it was decided that the young man could go free. The captive's bonds were cut. He was allowed to leave the council chamber, and although unable to walk, was carried to the lodge of his deliverer. For the second time, his life had been saved. This young Frenchman, Radisson, went on to do many things, including the discovery of the great Northwest. When a captive among the Mohawks, he had cherished boyish dreams of discovering many wild nations. And when his brother-in-law, Grossier, asked him to take a journey with him far to the westward, he only too readily acquiesced. Late one night in June, Grossier and he stole out from Three Rivers, accompanied by Algonquin guides. They went as far as Green Bay, spent the winter there, then when the spring sun warmed the land, they traveled westward, passed across what is now the state of Wisconsin, and reached a mighty river rushing profound and comparable to the St. Lawrence. It was the upper Mississippi, now seen for the first time by white men. The spring of 1679 found the explorers still among the prairie tribes of the Mississippi, and from them Radisson learned of the Sioux, a warlike nation to the west, who had no fixed abode but lived by the chase and were at constant war with another tribe to the north, the Crees. The 2 Frenchmen pressed westward, circled over the territory now known as Wisconsin, eastern Iowa and Nebraska, South Dakota and Montana, and back over North Dakota and Minnesota to the north shore of Lake Superior. Then Radisson made a snowshoe trip towards Hudson Bay, and back again, living on moose meat and the flesh of beaver and caribou. Finally, after adventures exciting and hair-raising, he and Grossier found their way to Three Rivers. Although Radisson was not yet 28 years of age, his explorations into the great Northwest had won him both fame and fortune. So this is the way that he spent his life, voyaging, trapping, trading. He covered all this great wild country, paddled up her rivers, fished in her lakes, smoked the pipe of peace in her settlements. In 10 years' time, he brought $500,000 worth of furs to an English trading company which employed him. Yet with all his explorations, all his adventures, all his trading, As he grew old, he remained as poor as one of the couriers, Dubois, who used to paddle him up the streams of New France. Until the year 1710, he drew an allowance of £50 a year, about $250, from the English Hudson Bay Trading Company. Then payments seemed to have stopped. Radisson had a wife and four children to support, but what happened to him or to them is unknown to history. Somewhere in the vast country of New France, the life of this daring adventurer went out, and somewhere in that vast possession lies the body of this first white man to explore the great Northwest. Oblivion hides all record of his death, and only the cry of the moose bird, harsh, discordant, the true call of the wilderness, echoes over the unknown spot where lie, no doubt, the bones of this trickster of the Mohawks, an explorer of the wastes of New France. Memorial tablets have been erected in many cities to commemorate La Salle, Champlain, and other discoverers. Radisson has no monument, save the memory of a valiant man of the woods, reverently held in the hearts of all those who love the hemlock forests, the paddle, the pack, and the magnetic call of the wilderness.